Good afternoon and welcome to Power for the People here on Solar Power WERU FM 89.9 in Blue Hill, 99.9 in Bangor, and everywhere in our solar system at WERU.org. I'm your host, Steve Kahl. Power for the People covers energy technology, policy, legislation, and homeowner solutions. And the focus today is the New England power grid, which supplies power to each of us. And so we will discuss the independent system operator of New England called ISO New England. And we always do try to avoid acronyms on this show, but I'm sure we're going to say ISO New England virtually every time. So again, that's independent system operator, which does, I'll put in quotation marks, control our grid. And we'll explore what that means with the two expert guests that we have. And those guests are Anya Poplavska of the Acadia Center, which is headquartered in Boston, but also has an office in Rockport, Maine, and Claire Lang Ree of the National Resource Defense Council, which I believe is headquartered in New York. Is that correct?
That's
has
right.
Has offices around other places in the country as well. So welcome, Anya and Claire. Great to have the chance to chat with experts on the grid, which again, I think is something, you know, a pretty much a mysterious thing for most of it. So this will be educational for the listeners. So take a couple of minutes to introduce yourselves, starting with Anya, why don't we, as the first author of the report that we're covering here. And so tell us a little bit about yourself and the Acadia Center.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you all. Really grateful to be speaking on the show today. My name is Anya Poplavska, and I currently work on transmission advocacy as a fellow at the Acadia Center. A little bit about me and my background. I worked at the Department of Energy Solar Energy Office prior to this, so I have a mix of experience in federal government, nonprofit advocacy prior to coming to the Acadia Center. Now, about the Acadia Center itself, Acadia Center is actually a Maine-based nonprofit that works to advance climate solutions for all with a focus on energy and transportation issues. It was actually founded and originally headquartered in Rockport, Maine, 25 years ago, and it works specifically within the Northeast and Eastern Canada. And at Acadia, we have our pursuit of advancing, you know, equitable climate solutions for all. And what that entails is we value data analysis and focus on community involvement. And we have a staff of about 20 employees that focus on policy, environmental justice, data, and energy systems broadly to achieve our pursuits. Now, what we're going to be
And can I just ask if you guys have been heavily involved in the Maine Climate Action Plan, Maine Won't Wait?
Yeah, I would say that Acadia Center has generally been involved in Maine energy issues. So, for instance, Acadia was instrumental in getting Maine to adopt its integrated planning grid process, which would help advance the goals of Maine climate planning generally. And Acadia has also helped establish Efficiency Maine, which is a huge player in the climate Maine space. So to answer your question, I think Acadia is doing a lot to generally get Maine aligned with its goals and reduce carbon emissions.
And that's an important role, Efficiency Maine. And in fact, they will be on this program next month. So thanks for that little bit of a segue. Claire, how about yourself in NRDC?
Yeah, thank you. And I'll echo Anya's thanks for having us on this morning. We're really excited to talk about transmission and the New England power grid. My name is Claire Langree. I am a clean energy advocate at NRDC, which is the Natural Resources Defense Council. We're an international nonprofit focused on fighting climate change, putting in place environmental protections, and working to advance environmental and economic resilience. So I work specifically on our Sustainable FERC project, which is a kind of a wonky team based. We have staff in each of the regional grids. And we also focus on FERC level issues. FERC is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which oversees the national power grid. So we work to advance decarbonization in the regional power grids. I focus on ISO New England, and I also focus on the regional grid of the Mid-Atlantic, which is called PJM. And it's called that because it was started by Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Maryland many years ago. And that's a little bit about me.
All right. Well, and certainly this program is all about issues that relate to what you guys do. I mentioned occasionally on this program, relative to beneficial electrification in my own personal life, my home is now 100% electric. Not only is it dealing with the carbon issue, but the previous owner burned like 1,000 gallons of oil a year. So pick your price, $4,000. My total energy bill for lights, cooking, heating, and everything else is $1,200. last year. I'm sure it's going to go up a little bit, but it's a far cry from the way the House used to be run. So I'm right on board with this, and I do like to walk the talk or talk the walk, whichever, however that goes. I never can quite remember. So you guys released a report that just came out, and I saw it, a press release about it, which is why I reached out to you about the future of the main grid, and it covered the FERC order, the Federal Energy Regulation Commission, Regulatory Commission Order 1920, to get the grid upgraded into the future, if you will, and ISO New England's longer term planning process, which report just came out, and you guys just released your report about it. But for starters, can you help the listeners realize what ISO New England is in a few sentences? You know, maybe both of you chime in with a couple, three sentences, and between those sentences, we'll begin to get a visualization of what ISO New England is all about. Now, Anya, do you want to start?
I can definitely start, and then Claire, feel free to chime in. So the way we would define what ISO New England is, it's called the region's independent system operator, and there's a variety of what's called independent system operators or regional transmission organizations all around the country. And for ISO New England specifically, it's tasked with maintaining reliability, planning and operating the transmission system. What's notable though is that ISO New England, when it comes to talking about transmission, it doesn't actually own the transmission system that we're talking about necessarily or own the energy assets. I think it's analogous to someone who's like a conductor in a symphony, essentially trying to keep the lights on, making sure things are balanced, supply and demand is being balanced, that transmission is being balanced so that our lights stay on. And ISO New England operates at what's called, when we talk about transmission, we talk about things at a transmission level. So, large voltages, large scale. And then when we talk about how that power eventually trickles down to households, to other parts of the grid, that's more distribution level, which we can get into. But that's kind of how the different things play out. If Claire, you want to add anything?
Yeah, I think Anya nailed it. And I'll just add that for the purposes of what we wrote about in this report, we were talking specifically about ISO New England's core function of overseeing the transmission system, which, as Anya said, are these really large, big power lines, like the ones that have huge metal towers if you look out, often like crossing highways or something. And they have really high voltages, so they can carry electricity really quickly over long distances. But ISO New England also has other functions. They also operate the region's electricity markets. And that's basically what decides what power sources are powering people's homes and businesses at the end of the day. And ISO New England is tasked with keeping the lights on, which is we'll refer to throughout this program as maintaining reliability. That's one of their core functions, is preventing blackouts. And so they do that by coordinating these power plants and making sure that electricity can flow. Another really important thing, and what's important to note for especially end user consumers like homes and businesses, is that New England's regional operator, ISO New England, is tasked with keeping rates just and reasonable. So electricity rates, they're in charge of making sure electricity rates are, which are overseen by FERC, are just and reasonable, and they can't discriminate against certain sources, and they have to make sure their rates are overseen by FERC, and that helps keep bills relatively affordable for people in the New England region. And that's a big issue area that we want to work on, is making sure electricity bills stay affordable through the clean energy transition.
All right, and that is certainly is a big deal. And my understanding of ISO New England is that they are because New England itself is natural gas focused, that their focus is natural gas. The main grid is 80% renewable, and yet we're paying the natural gas prices. And that is something we have talked about in this program. Anybody want to comment on that irony?
Yes, for sure. So New England, ISO New England itself is resource neutral. So they don't really have a preference among resources, but some of their market rules and the ways that they operate the grid definitely favor natural gas. And that's because the New England grid obviously has a long history of being fossil fuel based for a long time. Because it is a regional grid, that means that the costs are shared among the region for certain aspects of the grid. A big mission for us is making sure we can transition away from natural gas. And another thing I'll note is that natural gas makes up the bulk of New England's power electricity supply. I think it's around 40%. which is higher than any other region in the US. And natural gas is seen as a reliable source of electricity, and in many instances, it might be. But natural gas also has these inherent risks that we think aren't fully captured in the economics of the way that New England chooses which electricity sources to run and which not to run. So I think a big initiative for us going forward is making sure that the operational realities of natural gas, so the times when it fails during big winter storms, are reflected in the actual amount of megawatts that is procured ultimately through the electricity markets for each day.
All right. And looking at a graphic from ISO New England, you just said natural gas at 40%. And their graphic says it's 55% today. Just so,
Oh,
I mean, not
I
to
was
bother
under.
you, but just to
No, that's
clarify,
good. Yeah.
just to clarify that number a little bit. And relative to risks, I'm a former professor and have taught climate science for some time. And methane, of course, is which is natural gas, is 82 times more powerful than CO2 as a greenhouse gas, and is increasing exponentially versus CO2 increasing linearly. And so, me, methane is a significant problem. Not to mention, and you mentioned the threats there a second ago, not to mention that houses blow up every now and then. And that probably hurts when that happens. So, Anya's analogy there that ISO New England is like a conductor in a symphony is a good one. I think that helps people think about it. But the issue is that ISO New England doesn't own the lines and doesn't own the generation. And so they can't influence the flute or the saxophone specifically. They're attempting to be a conductor, it seems to me. And so would it help to give us a physical description of what ISO New England is like? I mean, my vision of ISO New England until I went on their website, and I'll tell you why in a minute, was that it's like a mini NASA with a bunch of people sitting around computers, telling this plant to go online and this other one to go offline. But what is a day-to-day operation? What does ISO New England look like?
Yeah, I can go first here. I think it's a good question, Steve, but I'll first tackle, what you said about, the analogy with the flute and the symphony. And I'll first say that just going to the article that Claire and I both co-wrote together, when we talk about transmission planning and the role that ISO New England plays, they may not own the transmission themselves, and you're right that they don't own the generation, but ISO New England still is able to play a critical role and is able to direct the flow of how things will be planned moving forward. So what Claire and I focused on in our article was the advent of what's called Order 1920, which is the first huge significant action that we've seen in decades coming from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission of this size when it comes to long-term transmission planning. So ISO New England is going to be mandated by this order, working with stakeholders to produce long-term transmission planning, looking at a variety of scenarios, looking at weather reliability. So it's essentially forcing ISO New England that's be able to look at all these parts to plan it comprehensively with its stakeholders and transmission owners and provide a plan that people will provide feedback on. So I'll let Claire add to like the day-to-day operations, but just want to add that ISO New England still has a major role, even if it doesn't own the transmission looking forward.
Yeah, Anya, I think nailed it. The role of the ISO, actually one of their primary roles, is to plan the future transmission grid. And Order 1920 has really changed the game for transmission planning for all of the regions by requiring the regions to do forward-looking comprehensive planning that takes into account factors like the clean energy transition or people electrifying their homes, like you, Steve. The ISO is now required to look at those factors and think, how will this impact the future of the electricity system? What will load look like in 20 years? What will the generation mix look like? And then help plan and ultimately solicit transmission lines that transmission owners will build into the future to meet those needs. So it's really comprehensive in that way, and that's where the ISO, I think, has a lot of control. And you also asked about the day-to-day operations of the ISO, and obviously I'm not in the control room, but in a simple sense, the ISO, so they operate the transmission system and they also are tasked with maintaining reliability, like we said. So they have this big control room, like you said, with all these screens and monitors, and really dedicated staff who work around the clock to make sure the lights stay on. And they're monitoring things like congestion on certain transmission lines, making sure a certain line doesn't have an outage. If it does, figuring out how to reroute that power through different pathways. They're also looking at which power plants are operating and how many megawatts of energy they're putting out. And so making sure that, if a power plant goes offline, they have other ones that they can call up and say, you need to turn on within 30 minutes to start providing reliability for the grid. An interesting thing is that since ISO doesn't own these power plants, they do all of this through markets. So they have daily electricity markets, which is where the power plants bid in every day to run, to operate. And the ISO chooses which ones to run based on, it's actually quite simple, least to most expensive. So the most expensive one that's required to meet demand won't, or one that's more expensive and won't, is more energy than you need to meet the demand of the day, won't be selected to run unless there's something bad happens, there's an outage or something. So all of that happens through markets, and there's also a little bit of a wonky thing called a capacity market, which is a forward-looking, I think of it like an insurance market. And that's where the ISO is planning for and paying resources to, well, the ISO doesn't pay the resource, the ratepayers pay the resources through electricity bills, but they're paying resources to promise to be available at some point in the future. And that just ensures that if there is an outage event or something extreme happens, these resources are ready to respond. It also helps send a signal for new resources to come online. So if the system is really tight, as in there's not enough supply to meet demand, prices will go up. And that's a sign for renewable developers to build new plants and get them constructed. So the markets are a way that it signals for new development, it keeps the system reliable, and the ISO operates these markets. But it's kind of an interesting, wonky system that's different than maybe if there's just one utility that owns the generation, the power line, the distribution line, and ultimately sends the electricity to your house.
All right,
Sorry if that was a lot of information.
we might see if we can touch on the Vermont situation where they haven't deregulated, but we'll see if we can get there because there's obviously a lot to cover here. So you're listening to Power for the People here on WERU FM 89.9 in Blue Hill, 99.9 in Bangor. And my expert guests today are Anya Poplavska of the Acadia Center and Claire Lang Rhee of the Natural Resource Defense Council, who have just authored a report about the Federal Energy Regulation Commission's request for Order 1920 and for the ISO New England Longer Term Transmission Planning Process, and they have just released a report, which is ultimately why we're talking about this. So, back to my question about what ISO New England looks like. So it does look like a mini NASA, if you will, with lots of people sitting in front of monitors. Are they physically rerouting things, or is there some automation involved?
Yeah, they use really sophisticated software. There's definitely a lot of automation involved. They use really sophisticated software and really sophisticated economic and physical modeling of the system. And they also will have to use that sophisticated software and modeling to plan for the future of the transmission system. So we've been thinking a lot about how to use that modeling to comply with Order 1920 and start planning the future transmission grid. And it's a little complicated, because thinking about what resources might be on the system in 20 years is, it seems like a simple question at first, but the more you think about it, there's all these layers of complexity, like where are these resources sited? How much do they cost? Like what market forces will be driving the location and of those resources, and what lines should we build to support them and to support the future load growth, due to things like electrification, electric vehicles, and also data center demand growth that we're seeing really explode in New England and in sort of the mid-Atlantic and Southeast. So preparing for things like that requires a lot of complicated models. Yeah.
Well, I'm interested that you mentioned demand and data centers because my understanding is that the demand on the national grid has gone down. And if it wasn't for data centers using more electricity than all the rest of us combined, there wouldn't be such an issue. And in fact, the demand on the grid in Maine has been going down since 2020. And so it is interesting that your report started by saying that this long-term planning process was, where's the word here, a monumental step forward, and will result in the construction of urgently needed transmission lines. Justify urgently needed to me.
I can go here. There's a variety of reasons why we use that phrasing. So, for instance, when we're thinking zooming out from the state level, just the federal level too, the country needs to triple its transmission capacity by 2050 in order to reach the goal of not adding any more CO2 into the atmosphere, according to a study done by Princeton. And New England, so northeastern states in particular, need 16 to 26 billion in transmission investments by mid-century in order to reach state policy goals. So it's not even just talking about regionally in that scenario, right? It's like each individual state, like you mentioned, Maine has its own ambitious carbon emission reduction goals. And if we want to reach those and move away from the status quo that we have now, we do need more transmission to come online. And some of the things that Claire and I talked about in our article, a variety of benefits when it comes to transmission. If we want to bring more clean energy online, transmission allows those new resources to come online. So even if we're making, decent progress in the status quo transmission, it's like a highway. It gives more surface area. It allows more resources to actually connect to our grid, and it creates grids that are more resilient, that decrease prices for consumers. One of the things I think we've mentioned at this point is this idea of congestion when supply and demand are mismatched, and transmission reduces the congestion because it allows more ability for power to move freely. And for instance, if we're talking about Maine, we know that Maine does tend to import a large percent of its energy. I believe it's about, 30%. Sure, I'm sure Steve, better than I do there. And so for Maine especially, if you're importing energy from Canada, from the Northeast, transmission is going to be critical also for reliability in the future. If Claire, you want to.
Right. So, and I understand that. I mean, long term. I mean, I was baiting you a little bit there,
Okay,
obviously,
that's fine.
relative to justify the increase. But there are, well, there's a lot of issues there, and we don't have a lot of time. So, in looking at the FERC Order 1920, and thinking about ISO New England's role in long term planning, longer term is the term they're used. So you mentioned $16 billion needed a few minutes ago there, Anya. But that's the utilities that have to pay that, not ISO New England, right? So what's the carrot that ISO New England hangs out there to get the utilities to do that?
I guess the carrot is that the utilities will recover those costs from their ratepayers, so they get paid to obviously provide the service of providing electricity, and they're also required to do it. So New England is required by FERC to implement this planning, and utilities are required to comply with New England's planning regime. So there's a legal, I guess, stick, but the carrot is that they get paid for that service.
Right, but and your point in your report is that of the seven requirements of the FERC order, the one that the ISO New England plan doesn't address is the mitigation of climate change. Geez, it seems to me that would be the first one you'd deal with. Tell me, it's a stated fact, but tell me, give me 2 cents worth on that, I guess.
I'll just jump in and say maybe phrasing technically one of the seven benefits that it doesn't address, the one that we mentioned, is related to like weather or reliability, but totally agree that that ties into climate change. And that was a huge reason we produced this report. We wanted to show the distinction between what the FERC order mandated and the direction we really want to push New England or the Northeast to go. And they're doing a lot of great things and, the other benefits they're meeting, but yeah, it's absolutely critical for us to consider weather and reliability as a benefit of long-term transmission. We mentioned this in the article. There are some existing systems that New England or ISO New England can utilize probably to meet this benefit. They use what I believe is called the PEAT system. There's another system that we talked about in our article. So there is modeling that ISO New England could use to bolster and to meet this benefit. But yeah, it's absolutely critical. And I know that especially in Maine, right now there's been like blackouts, and a lot of people have like backup generation, and reliability is critical. We want people to keep their lights on, and that's why we need transmission.
Right. So, Central Maine Power was criticized repeatedly during the Pine Tree Power campaign, as you guys probably know, because of poor reliability. But ultimately, ISO New England is partly responsible for that poor reliability. Isn't that correct? You're not. You're nodding, so I'm going to take that as a yes. And then the next, we're down to about 3 minutes. This was not on my list of things to ask you about, but because you've mentioned pricing and markets, I hope you folks are aware of this. I saw an article, I'm going to say 2 weeks ago, about a planned new natural gas pipeline coming into, that's planned, and I think the contracts have been let, I'm not positive, coming in to add capacity to New England. And the conclusion of the article, it was going to cause our electric rates to skyrocket. Is ISO New England involved in that kind of thing? And that would seem like they're not really engaged with pricing in that case.
Yeah, that's a really good question, Steve. Yeah, so there have been a lot of pipelines proposed through New England, and we think that the chances of these actually getting built might be sort of low. There's a lot of permitting hurdles that they have to overcome. But the way that ISO New England is involved is that ISO New England's continued reliance on natural gas as sort of baseload power means that they need more supply because the resources supply, I mean, sorry, the region is supply constrained. And we think that the ISO should instead turn towards a diverse resource mix made up of things like battery storage, offshore wind, and onshore renewables, combined with well-planned transmission lines. And that'll really decrease costs for consumers. And we won't need to build any new pipelines.
And towards that, I mean, we're essentially out of time here, and I can see where I need to have you back on if I can convince you to come back on another time. But relative to that question there, I see the ISO New England projected resource mix of natural gas being 55% today, going to 3.4% in 2050. I'd love to see that, but one of the issues in the FERC order is to avoid investment that would not meet long-term goals. So that pipeline certainly seems like it's out of place, if we can say that, and maybe it won't happen. Anyway, we are out of time. Sorry about that. But again, we've only scratched the surface, I think, here. I've got 59 pages of more questions here for another time. But you have been listening to Power for the People here on WERU 89.9 in Blue Hill and 99.9 in Bangor with guest Anya Poplavska of the Acadia Center. And Claire Lang Rhee of NRDC, the Natural Resources Defense Council. Power for the People airs the fourth Friday in the Public Affairs time slot at 4:30. So join us next time when my guests will be staffers from Efficiency Maine, our annual meeting with program with Efficiency Maine to summarize the many rebates and opportunities to save energy and money in your life from state and federal agency. Thanks so much, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is fun. Appreciate it.